Once upon a time, youth in the 50s and 60s lived in fear. They practiced going to fallout shelters to escape the atomic bomb. Independence resident Michael Scheibach has studied this period of American history extensively. In addition to combing through school newspapers, Scheibach's collection of photographs, posters, and other artifacts tell the story of an America trying its best to prepare for the possibility of annihilation. At the Kansas City Library, Michael Scheibach gave Susan Wilson a tour of the memorabilia that can be viewed in the exhibit Alert Today, Alive Tomorrow, Living with the Atomic Bomb.
And if the Mr. Ring gets on you, it's apt to make you very sick.
What would you do about it?
I'd scrub thoroughly with a detergent and water.
I'm here outside of the exhibit Alert Today, Alive Tomorrow with Michael Scheibach. We're greeted by a stand of booklets that help people prepare for a potential atomic attack.
The government published some 400 pieces of literature, and what's on this poster and what's in the exhibit are samples of some of the publications that were issued during anywhere from the late 1940s into the 1950s.
What are some of your favorite pieces here?
I've really gotten into comic books. It's one of the things, atomic comics. And what we've added to the exhibit are just some samples of comics from the late 1940s, actually, showing different aspects of the bomb and how comic books interpreted the bomb. One of the great things for kids during this period, if they mother took them to buy a box of Kix cereal, they could actually get an atomic bomb ring. And if you took off the end of the ring, you could actually see the particles sparkling inside. So we have this. And one of the more fascinating and actually controversial things that we have here is in 1947, Disney created what they called mini-comic called Donald Duck's Atom Bomb. And if you bought a box of Cheerios or a couple of other types of cereals, you actually had this inside. It was a free mini-comic. And it became very controversial because in the comic, Donald Duck invents an atomic bomb, but he loses it to Professor Sleazy, who's suspected of being a spy, who accidentally explodes it.
That doesn't sound good.
It doesn't sound good, and Disney had a lot of negative publicity, and he made a mandate that it would never be reprinted. So it's a very rare object, but again, it's an example of how popular culture was taking the whole idea of the atom bomb and make it as something that children could, you know, laugh at.
So refresh the memories of some and inform others who may not be aware. What was the world like when all of this tension around the atomic bomb was at its peak?
You know, it really began, obviously, on August 6, 1945, when the U.S. dropped the first atomic bomb on Hiroshima. But it wasn't until August of 1949, when the Soviet Union exploded its own atomic bomb, that we really began seeing the escalation of information, warning people and to be prepared for the possibility and the real probability that there might be an atomic war. So by 1950 and into the early 1960s, the U.S. government published some 400 million pieces of literature on civil defense. Thousands of people were actively involved in various civil defense organizations, and you know, at its peak, it was a very real and very scary time because Americans were told, you know, to expect the Soviet Union attacking us really at any moment.
Now, this one says six survival secrets for atomic attack. What were some of the secrets they gave out at that time?
You know the difference between what the alarms would be. There was a certain alarm for an immediate attack, a certain alarm for having a few minutes, making sure your car was full of gas and completely equipped and ready to go at any moment, knowing, having your house supplied. You were encouraged to have 14 days of food and drink supplied in your home in case of an atomic attack. Make sure your house was clean, and a great emphasis on what they called atomic housewifery, so that women who stay at home moms, their job was to make sure the yard was clean and the house was clean, because a dirty house and a dirty yard would only increase the possibility of fire. So there were very specific things that every family should know in order to have an opportunity and a chance to survive.
Here's a pinup girl with a mushroom cloud on the front of her.
Yeah, this is another example of how this whole era, it's such a dichotomy between the extreme serious, oh my gosh, you know, we might die in an atomic attack, to popular culture kind of taking not only the fear but the fascination. This is Miss Atomic Bomb, I believe, 1957.
What did you learn about Kansas City at that time from either your research or the artifacts you collected?
Well, Kansas City was really no different than most cities. Civil defense drills being conducted at schools, high school newspapers publishing information about the bomb, school assemblies bringing in speakers that would talk about the military situation or the Soviet Union or communism. A lot of high schools had civil defense clubs, so you might belong to the chess club or you might belong to the civil defense club. And if you were in the civil defense club, your job was to go around to classes and talk about the dangers of the atomic bomb. So schools throughout Kansas City were very active and had a lot of activities related to the bomb.
Now, people may not know this, but I noticed in your research you found out that Kansas City had a special vulnerability during this era.
Most experts expected the Soviet Union to have an attack on the United States coming across the Arctic and coming down from the northern states to the south. And just our location, we were actually in a direct path from Omaha, Nebraska, which was the Strategic Air Command, which would have been one of the main targets of the Soviet Union. And, of course, we had missile silos all through Kansas. So even though we were in the middle of the country, we were actually very vulnerable to a Russian attack.
The other local connection, some people were concerned about surviving an attack. So tell me about the Merrimack Caverns Atomic Bomb Shelter Club.
Yes, if you were lucky enough to be in Missouri and South Missouri, you could actually buy a ticket, believe it or not, that would allow you entry into the caverns of Missouri in case of an all-out atomic attack. And I have one. You know, it's almost beyond belief that you could actually buy a ticket that would guarantee you entry. Of course, we never knew what would happen, what might have happened if there actually had been an attack and if people would have been able to give their ticket at the door.
Or whether they reached capacity in the numbers of tickets that they sold. Right.
Yes, and just make sure they didn't reach capacity.
What did your research tell you about the impact of, you know, this atomic age on families and on children?
Well, it was just a tremendous amount of information was given by the government at home, at work, in the community, and really at school. So it really is a fascinating period, the 1950s and early 1960s, because on the one hand you have Ozzie and Harriet and I Love Lucy, and on the other hand you have fallout shelters and radiation kits and information about how you need to go about surviving an atomic attack.
Now, speaking of fallout shelters, it was very common during that time for school children to practice drills into fallout shelters. What did you learn about those?
Yeah, they started in 1951. The Soviet Union exploded its bomb in 49, and by 51, the first civil defense drills here in Kansas City occurred in March of 1951. And by 1952, about 85% of all schools in America were doing civil defense drills, both duck and cover, which were the drills that basically under the desk, but also more air raid drills where they would march them down to the cellar or to the safest part of the school. And some schools actually did them every 2 weeks during the early 1950s. So school children, probably more than any other generation during that time, were at the forefront of the atomic scare because they actually saw it in schools.
Based on your research and your collection in general, what are the lessons learned from this era?
I think the biggest lesson for, you know, people that come to see this is, you know, we now live in a post 9/11 world. We're embroiled in what they call the war on terror. And by going back and looking at this period, what I would say is that Americans from the 1950s into the 1960s, the government was not telling them to be prepared for pinpointed terrorist attack, they were being told to be prepared for an atomic war that could kill. I mean, estimates that the government would talk about in the 1950s were upwards of 60 million people. And so I think it kind of helps us put our world into a better perspective, that there was another time and another generation that experienced an incredible fear about an incredible time and the potential of an attack. But at the end, we survived. I mean, at the end, life went on and we moved through the Cold War. And to me, it just makes me feel better about our world today, because we worked through these problems. We need to be cautious, but we don't need to fear the world we live in.
Michael Scheibach is co-curator of an exhibit of artifacts from high schools and civil defense called Alert Today, Alive Tomorrow. It's on display at the Kansas City Public Library Central Branch until January 7th. You can also see pictures of the exhibit on our website at kcur/kccurrents.org.
You were not ready, did not know what to do. It could hurt you in different ways. It could knock you down hard or throw you against a tree or a wall. It is such a big explosion, it can smash in buildings, knock signboards over, break windows all over town. But if you duck and cover like Bert, you will be much safer. You know how bad sunburn can feel. The atomic bomb flash.
Coming up, KC locals tackle the traditional folk music of Portugal. This is KC Currents.